This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
Welcome to episode number 247 of What Did You Watch This Week? My name is Mike.
My name is John. I had my wrong note page up there. I had page from my D&D notebook. And I'm like, why is this talking about gold pieces? Nope. Wrong page.
Wrong. Yeah, well, that's all right. I just clicked over my note here and I'm like, what? Oh, no. That's from my blog.
Yeah, so
I've done the same thing. I did the deal. So, we don't have Cobra Kai to talk about, so I'm going to move that from the top of the list to the top of the list. Forgot to do that last week.
I found that this week I didn't have a lot of time overall. I don't know where the week went. It was a very blur of a week, and I'm still not entirely sure what all went on, but yeah. I did get all my stuff watched, but I didn't watch any movies and I didn't watch anything extra.
Well, I sat with my leg up all week because I've got that superficial thrombolitis going on, and I watched way too much stuff.
Yeah, you started sending me updates stuff. And I was trying to keep up at first, and then I'm like, no, this guy's got way more time than I do. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Way too much stuff. Way too much stuff. So let's just dive right in. Both feet. This is us returned. Again, this week's episode was Randall going to find out about his mother.
Yes, 99% of this episode was just that.
See, this was a very unique episode where it was, like you said, 99% was us being introduced to learning about a new character who was dead already.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we basically got kind of the beginning, middle, and end of her story,
mm-hmm.
all from her boyfriend, Hai. And it was an interesting story, you know.
It was. It didn't play out like I expected it to.
Yeah, no, it didn't play out like I expected at all. And it wasn't like Hai and her met when she was – apparently she was from a very affluent, rich family down in Louisiana.
Yes. Chi McBride is her father. Oh, love that guy.
Yeah. And she – the property that she owned was a little farmhouse that her aunt owned, her dad's sister.
Yep.
And basically, you know, she and Hai started seeing each other and they developed a relationship. And then her father was going to make her marry somebody that she didn't want to marry and not allow her to be with who she wanted to be with. So she decided to skip town, basically.
Yep.
And she was going to go to Montreal or someplace, New York. I can't remember wherever she was going. She only went as far as her money would allow her to on her bus ticket, which was where she met William.
Yep. Philadelphia is where she ended
up. Yeah. And she didn't get into drugs until she moved away. She was not a drug addict as a teenager. She didn't run away a drug addict, but she got hooked on drugs while she was there. And then the reason why, after that, William thought she was dead was because when the rescue revived her and brought her to the hospital, when she got healed up and got better, she was arrested and the judge decided to make an example of her and she got put in prison for 5 years in federal prison.
Yep.
And they didn't have a phone. So when she tried to call William from jail before she got sentenced, she couldn't. And she wouldn't.
And like you said, it was federal prison and it was overcrowded. So she got shipped out to California.
Yep. She called her dad, but then wouldn't talk to him. But yeah, she got shipped to California, did her 5 years. And when she got out, she went back to Louisiana. And Hai was married and had kids.
Yeah.
And so they kind of worked at the same farmer's market, but they didn't actually see each other, spend time with each other. But Haya was that he described her as being the love of his life.
Yep. Yeah, because by eventually, the time she got back there, you know, his life had moved on. He had a wife. He had a kid.
Yeah. And then fast forward like another 40 years or whatever it was, and she doesn't show up at the farmer's market one day. So High goes to see her what's wrong and discovers that she's sick and she has breast cancer. And basically he then kind of stays with her now until she died. And that's when he learned about her life. And that's when he learned about her kids, Randall, and her relationship with William and going to prison and on and on and on. Mm-hmm. And it was good. It was good. Very good episode. And it ends with High basically saying, oh, by the way, this is your house now.
Yeah. That was the only part that was like, well, that seems a little easy, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure they'll talk about it in paperwork this week.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we also, the only thing they didn't do is we learned, the only family we learned about was her brother. And that was the other reason why she left, because her brother went off to Vietnam and got killed in Vietnam.
Yep.
So, Randall's like, I just learned in the last 5 minutes, I just learned about my uncle and that he's and lost him.
Yep.
So his grandparents, we don't know what happened to them. The assumption is that they're dead.
Right.
But we have no idea what happened to them, if they had any land or anything, if he had any other family. But then again, if it was only the two of them and the brother died without having kids and the mom died, and she didn't have any more kids that we're aware of.
Right.
So, yeah. So we'll have to see what happens.
Mm-hmm. So, but then the reason that we said that this was 99% was because the last 1% was Randall basically saying, you know what? I want to bury the hatchet. I'm going to call Kevin.
Yeah.
And he calls Kevin and Kevin's like, I'm sorry, man. I can't talk right now. She's in labor. I got to drive home. I should never have come here. And he's driving along a road somewhere at night and hangs up.
Yeah. So that'll be interesting.
Yep.
That'll be interesting to see what happens on that side of things too.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yep. All right. Superstore. Got annoyed this week. Did you get annoyed this week?
Honestly, I liked a lot of this episode this week.
I got annoyed by...
I could see where you got annoyed.
I got annoyed by the manager. What's his name?
Glenn.
I got annoyed by Glenn's oblivion about things.
Yes, I completely agree with you there. That was ridiculous. Yep. It was over the top. And those are usually the type of annoyances that really get to me, or when people are completely ignorant. That's why half of The Office is unwatchable to me, because of Michael Scott's ignorance.
Oh, yeah. I don't find that funny whatsoever. No. But it wasn't bad enough that it would make me not want to watch the show.
See, there were two things in this episode that I really liked. One was the fact that they made this episode about racism.
Yep.
But they handled it much better than most of the other shows out there. I mean, it's a sitcom,
mm-hmm.
so you expect it to be humorous, but they made it serious and humorous, and they treated it with respect, but also threw in some jokes, but it was never jokes at like the expense of the message that was trying to get across. Basically, they made Garrett be in charge of finding all the racist things in the store that corporate could change.
Yep.
And there were people who, they were like, oh, I want this type of thing in the vending machines. And he's like, that's not really racism. He's like, well, I want it. You know, we got 5 rows of sour cream and onion chips, and I don't like sour cream and onion chips. And show me one black person in here that likes sour cream and onion chips. And none of them raise their hands. He's like, see, so it's racist. And, Garrett was really perturbed. You know, he's usually the joker, sarcastic one, and he was actually perturbed by the whole thing, because he's like, this is a legitimate problem. This is a real thing, and nobody's taking it seriously. So I really appreciated that.
I appreciated that as well.
And I also appreciated Sandra, who's normally a doormat, basically Cheyenne and Mateo are going to be having a movie party where they're going to sit in camp chairs out on the front lawn and watch a movie projected on the side of the building. Yep. And they don't want to invite Sandra because they're like, oh, she'll be so lame. And then they're like, yeah, but we feel guilty, so we should probably invite her. So they invite her and she's like, no, thanks. And then they want to know why. And she basically, she's nice about it, but she's like, yeah, you guys aren't very COVID safe. You know, Cheyenne's got her mask down under her chin and Mateo's not even wearing his. He's like twirling it in his fingers. And yeah. She's like, you're not very safe and I don't feel comfortable. So, you know, enjoy your party. I don't want to be around you. And so for the rest of the episode, they're like, we're dirty. Oh, you think we're dirty? So they're like hand sanitizing everything and trying to prove to her. And then they go and get COVID tests and they're like, look, we're negative. And she's like, that's great. Just have fun. You know, I don't want to be part of that. So they basically uninvite everybody else and only invite her and change the movie to Herbie Fully Loaded because that's what she wants to see.
Yeah.
And then they realize that they were doing all this just to gain the approval of Sandra and it was ridiculous and Cheyenne cancels, which was hilarious. But I liked, again, the fact that they addressed an issue that is going on out there and made light of it, but at the same time made sure that it was a serious thing.
Yep. Yeah.
Because she was never mean about it. She wasn't like, you guys are fucking going to die. She was just like, yeah, I just don't feel comfortable around you because neither one of you seems to be very, you know, you post on Instagram where you're all sitting there unmasked in groups of people. And I just don't feel comfortable in that. So I'm going to say no.
Yep. No, I like how they handled it as well. We did not get a new episode of The Unicorn this week.
Correct.
Which stinks, but that'll be back next week, hopefully. Blacklist is also supposed to be back at the end of this week.
Yep.
Connors came back a week early. Candace Bergen or Candace Murphy Brown guest starred as Becky. Sorry, as Darlene's boyfriend's mom.
Okay.
So I enjoy. It was a fun episode. I'll just leave it at that. I know it's not a show you watch. If you were a fan of Roseanne, you would love the Connors. So it's worth your time to watch it. Period, in my opinion. Yeah.
Speaking of shows that one of us watches and the other one doesn't, Prodigal Son came back this week. I'm really glad that I stuck with this. Like,
oh, really?
I remember I hit a rut in the first season and I stuck with it based on my sister's suggestion, and it really came on strong at the end of the season, and it's still just as strong this season.
Nice.
I really enjoy it. And Michael Sheen is awesome anyway.
Michael Sheen is pretty awesome.
I got to tell you, season two of Staged is apparently out in Britain because I've been seeing clips and memes of it all over the place. Like, I watched a clip the other day that had Phoebe Waller-Bridge on there, on their Zoom call.
Nice. Oh,
I'm so excited. I can't wait to see the rest of that.
Nice. I'm looking forward to that as well.
But yeah, Prodigal Son honestly is a good show. It really came around and I'm really digging it.
Cool. Yeah, I only watched a couple movies this week myself. I know we talked about that offline. You said you didn't watch any movies earlier or whatever. I only watched a couple this week myself. Nice. But I did watch the entire first season of a new show on HBO Max.
What's that?
Warrior.
And what did you think of that? Obviously, you watched the whole season, so you obviously liked it.
Okay, so I loved it. Okay. I thought it was fantastic. I absolutely love it. I give it a hard sell. If you like watching martial arts and you enjoy like a period piece, because it takes place in 1870s San Francisco, with the racism, with the ironically the Irish and the Chinese and everyone else in the Chinese. I mean, I absolutely love it. I think it's fantastic. Shannon Lee, the daughter of Bruce Lee, is one of the executive producers of the series. It's based on the treatment that was written by Bruce Lee, obviously before he died. Okay. It was a movie he planned or a TV series he planned or whatever. But Bruce Lee also came up with the Kung Fu, you know, the David Carradine show when they cast David Carradine in it. Bruce Lee had pitched it for himself. So I wouldn't be surprised if this is a TV show. It's very adult. There's a lot of nudity. There's a lot of sex in it. There's a lot of graphic violence and killing. I thought the season one finale ended kind of like, oh, so it's over. Like, it was really weird. There wasn't a cliffhanger. There wasn't, I don't know. It was the weakest episode of the season, quite frankly, which usually that means it's a bad thing. But season two, episode one was decent. So I started season two already.
Nice.
It was a Cinemax original series, and it was Cinemax's first original series. Season 2 premiered October 2020. Season 1 came out in April of 2019. I do not know if HBO Max is going to do a third season of it or not. I haven't heard. I also haven't heard it was canceled.
Okay,
so, no, sorry. Yeah, in 1971, Bruce Lee developed a concept for a television series tentatively titled Assam, about a martial artist in the American Old West, but he was having trouble pitching it to Warner Brothers and Paramount. According to Bruce Lee's widow, Lee's concept was retooled and renamed Kung Fu. So this is what he wrote that became Kung Fu.
Gotcha.
And so now, because the lead character in the show is called Assam.
Gotcha, okay.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I really enjoy it.
Nice.
I really enjoy it, yeah. So, again, I don't know if we're going to get a third season or not, but I'd be kind of watching that.
So, without getting into the rest of it just yet, would you say at this point that you feel that you're getting your money's worth out of HBO Max?
Yes, John. I feel like I'm getting my money's worth out of HBO
Max. That's not me pitching it. That's me being legitimate, because I know that a big concern is, like, with CBS All Access, you know, paying $10 a month and only having a couple of shows. But, like, aside from the ones that we're watching together, like, do you feel that you're looking at it going, yeah, there's some good stuff on here?
Well, if you haven't, if for all those that missed out on paying $70 for 6 months, you made a mistake. I'll say that, because, I mean, realistically, you save like $3 a month. Okay. Yep. At the end of the day, you're saving $3 a month, but still that's $3 a month, my opinion. This is how I can justify HBO Max. Because this is like the big thing of, like, people say, like, you're just nickel and diming yourself because, I mean, you're going to pay for all these services. You might as well get cable. Okay. I pay for WWE Network. I would not get with cable.
Right.
I pay for Netflix, which I would not get with cable. I pay for Disney Plus, which I would not get with cable. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I pay for Hulu, which there's some Hulu original. I actually find I'm watching less and less Hulu. But that could be because the shows have just been off for so long. But
yeah.
Anyway, Hulu, it's stuff that I'm not going to get with cable necessarily, but maybe. But still, that's really the only one. HBO Max, I'm going to have to pay for that with cable.
Right.
That's an add-on with cable. And Kate just said today that right now Starz is having a six-month deal for $25. And she thinks she wants to get that because she wants to watch the new season of Outlanders. They've only got like the first three or four seasons on Netflix. The last three or four are not. And she wants to watch them. And then there's a few other movies that we've wanted to watch as of late, which is on Stars.
Okay.
So she's thinking about getting 6 months of that. But anyways, the point I'm trying to make is everything that we watch or we subscribe to, if you will, is nothing that we would get if we had cable.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So as far as HBO Max is concerned, it's if you're paying the $14.99 a month, it is kind of expensive, if you will. But with the added bonus of all the movies they're going to be releasing on it this year.
Yeah.
You know, like, we already got Wonder Woman. We got Pretty Little Things this month. We have
March Kombat 26th. Coming up.
Mortal Kombat?
Nope. March 26th, Godzilla vs. Kong hits HBO Max.
We're getting Godzilla vs. Kong a couple months early. We're getting Mortal Kombat, you know, the Snyder Cut. We're getting all kinds of stuff.
Yep.
You know, and I would go see Godzilla vs. Like, for me personally, I would have gone to see Wonder Woman in the theaters if theaters had been functioning properly and safely. Correct.
I would have as well.
I would have spent almost $15 on my ticket, you know?
Yep.
I would damn go see Godzilla vs. Kong in the movie theater, because that's something I want to see on the big screen, you know?
Absolutely.
So, yeah. I think HBO Max is worth it. My wife watches Friends every day. I mean, I think she's almost done the entire run.
Again.
And we've had it less than a month. Again, yeah. We watch other stuff on there. Like I said, I've been watching Warrior and, you know, I absolutely friggin' love Lovecraft Country.
Yes.
which I that's a show that I want to burn through so badly because I just want to watch it. But at the same time, I want to watch one a week because I don't want to, I want to make it last.
Yep.
But I actually just ordered, like, I was doing an Amazon order for something else. Amazon deal of the day was my unflavored protein powder last week.
Yep.
It was, it's normally like almost $50 for the giant can or jar, whatever you want to call it, 47 servings of it.
Yep.
But it was down for like $31 that day. So I snagged one. And then I also ordered the, they have the paperback of the Lovecraft Country for $9. So I was like, you know what? I want to read this book. So I ordered the book. So once the series, I'm going to wait on reading the book until I'm done watching the series.
Okay.
So I actually bought the book, but I'm loving this show.
Nice.
Season 3, Holy Ghost. So apparently this takes place about 3 weeks after George's funeral.
Yep.
Letty gets an inheritance from her dead mom that she wasn't planning on. And she buys this old, run-down, giant house in an all-white neighborhood. So you know that's going to go well.
Right, right.
Chicago's north side. And she's going to make it a boarding house. And, of course, you know, making it a boarding house, they get harassed by the neighbors. They do things like park their cars out front and tie bricks to the horns so the horns never stop ringing.
Which, nowadays, you couldn't do that.
No, you couldn't do anything they did in this. Like, when the police drive by and be like, yep, we're going to let them do this. And then when she calls to file a complaint about it with the police and none of them heard anything about it or receive those complaints. And yet when she finally gets fed up and goes out and does something about it, the police show up to arrest her for damaging the white people's cars, which were illegally parked on the street in front of her residence.
Not only that, but like they all got down on their hands and knees, put their hands behind their back because they knew. They were like, we're not going to get to explain this.
Yep. So I love the episode. It was a haunted house episode at the same time.
What was really interesting and what continues to be interesting about this show is that they most of the episodes seem like they are just – a show about racial inequalities during this time period in that area. But then they kick it up with those supernatural elements that you're like, whoa.
Yeah. And even when Letty gets arrested and the captain or the sheriff or the sergeant is just like, why did you buy the Winthrop house?
Yeah.
Who told you to buy it, you know? But long and the short of it, Atticus confronts Christina, who we met in the previous and at the end of episode 1 and through episode 2, you know, her father was one that was running the Sons of Adam.
Yep.
And we didn't know what happened to her after episode 2 when the house burnt down.
Right.
So basically at the end of this episode, we find out through when Atticus confronts her and he tries to shoot her, but he can't because she explains that she has some sort of protection spell that's on her. So no one can harm her. And her dad had the same spell on him, but he had to lower the spell for this for the to try to do the
portal to the Garden of Eden.
Yeah, the ritual, and that's why he died. But anyway, so Atticus can't shoot her, even though he was trying to. And I did watch 3 movies. Anyways, Atticus can't shoot her, even though he actually tried to. But long and the short of it, she gave Letty the money.
Yeah,
she put the realtor to sell her that house, and that Horatio Winthrop was a Sons of Adams member who was banished after stealing pages from the Book of Names in the late 1800s. Epstein, this doctor, was a follower of Winthrop's, and he was experimenting on black people. And so there was 9 ghosts in this house, and it was all people that this guy had experimented on. And the police sergeant helped find him candidates who disappeared from Chicago's east side and ended up in this house. And it's really good. Like, people need to go watch this, in my opinion.
Yes. Yeah, this is a phenomenal show.
Like, realistically, you could watch this one episode and not watch the entire series and still appreciate the show and enjoy it, this episode.
Absolutely.
Like, you didn't have to watch episodes 1 and 2 to watch this episode. It's almost like it's a anthology story, but it's not an anthology story, you know?
Yep. Yep.
It does have a continuation of characters, but yeah.
Which makes sense if you're watching it. Otherwise, it sounds weird to say it's an anthology story that's not really an anthology story with the same characters. And
yeah, but it's definitely like a Monster of the Week standalone episode with a little bit of the overarching storyline that like X-Files did so beautifully and originated realistically.
Yes.
I can't wait to watch episode 4. Like, we have 10 episodes. Again, this is something I would love to sit and just watch everything, but I do want to make it last at the same time.
Same here. Yep.
The flight attendant. I feel like I'm almost done with this.
This was kind of rough, wasn't it?
It started out good, but
she keeps continuing doing the same thing that I was complaining about last week.
Yep.
You know, I'm going to go fly to this place and snoop around and investigate. And even her lawyer friend has pretty much given up on her. She's like, don't let her into the house. I don't know this person. She's like, no, I've got evidence. I've got proof here. And she's like, you've got shredded paper. And then, of course, the boyfriend's like, oh, well, this won't be so bad. It's not even crosscut. We could probably put this together.
Yeah.
And she's failing at the whole trying to be there for her brother and her nieces. She's failing miserably. She manages to show up to the quote unquote date, you know, that they're supposed to be at the aquarium or whatever.
Yep.
But, you know, she flakes on them early because she's going to go get more evidence and she's drunk. You know, her brother's like later on when they're talking, he's like, yeah, I smelled alcohol on you. And she's like, no, I wasn't drunk.
Yeah. And there was also the thing where the kids wanted a little stuffed animal and the dad said no because I've pulled this as a parent myself. Going to wrestling was the experience. I don't need to buy you a t-shirt or an action figure or something like that at the show because just going is the experience. I don't need to spend the extra money. So I've pulled that shit myself as a dad and cheaping out.
It's your prerogative as a parent, though.
Correct. It is. It is. You know, and if I want to get him something that time we go, I will. But the way I look at it is I'd rather take him to an independent show every month and spend that $10 to $15 on the ticket than every time I take him, I got to, you know, buy snacks, buy this, buy that. You know, it's like going to the movies. Like, I don't buy snacks and shit when I go to the movies. We go to watch the movie. That's the end of it.
Yeah. Sneak in the snacks if you want to have snacks.
Exactly. So, and that's what basically they're trying to teach their daughters a lesson of. We came to the aquarium You don't need to have a little stuffed animal of a whale to remember your experience here at the aquarium.
Yep.
And, you know, Kaylee Kiyoko's character buys them anyway and gives them to the kids and says, don't tell your dad. So, of course, dad's pissed when he finds it. And the daughters are like, well, auntie told us not to tell you.
Yeah.
And so you fucking told my kids to lie to me and deceive me.
Yeah.
So I get why he was pissed about that.
Yep.
1,000%.
And she's not a sympathetic character. Like, nope. Everything that she does makes me like her less and makes me want her to fail. Like, in the beginning, you kind of felt bad for her because you were like, well, you know, she lives this life of jet setting all over the place. She never knows where she's going to be. Well, she knows where she's going to be, but you know what I mean? Like, she's always lay over here or, you know, we're now here. And so I have to spend the night here. So she lives this party lifestyle because that's how she copes, whatever. And then this horrible thing happens and it looks like she could get framed. She was a sympathetic character then. Now she's becoming less, much less so every episode. And it's really annoying and really frustrating.
Yep.
So I don't like it.
Yeah, I don't know if I don't know if I'm going to bother to watch another one.
I think I am, but that's also because I gave up on The Stand and Sweet Home. So, and we finished out 2 shows this week, so I've got a bit of an opening there.
Sure. Well, if you're going to watch an episode, I may watch an episode. But at the same time, you know, last night, Batwoman came back, and I am going to check that out.
Oh, I think I should check that out.
CW shows come back this week as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've also given up on The Stand. I'm not going to bother to watch anymore, and I've given up on Sweet Home.
In fact, I think I'm going to be canceling my CBS All Access subscription again. because I don't really need anything on it. I, based on your message, I went and watched all of the Lower Decks. It was cute. It was fun.
Well, let's talk about that. I finished Lower Decks. It was enjoyable.
It was enjoyable.
If they put another season out and I had CBS All Access again for the purpose of watching Twilight Zone or Picard, because I'll get another month of it again at some point when my shows are back on it.
Yes. Yep.
And I would watch Lower Decks again. Mm-hmm. I would watch the second season of that show. It's not worth $10 a month for that show.
No, it is not. It is definitely not. It was an enjoyable show, but it was nothing that I'm like, oh my God, you've got to go out and watch this. It's nothing that I'm going to hard sell anybody. They do a lot of name dropping to remind you that this is the Star Trek universe. You know, John DeLancey is actually in there as Q once or twice. They talk about Picard. They talk about the Janeway maneuver, Voyager.
They talk about Shatner.
Yep. Oh, yeah. They reference back old episodes all the time.
Jonathan Frakes directed episodes.
Yep.
What was it? They mentioned Enterprise.
Yep. They mentioned the Enterprise all the time.
No. They mentioned the TV series Enterprise.
Oh, okay.
They talk about who is the captain. Who is Scott Bakula to the captain? Yeah, they talk about Captain Archer. They talk about
Trip, his first mate there.
Yep, they talk about so much stuff. They definitely name drop every Star Trek series we've seen in the past. Well, absolutely. They talk every single one of them, which I loved. My favorite part, though, episode 10, when the Titan shows up and we actually see number one, I can't think of his name, Riker.
Yep.
There we go. And we, you know, he's voiced by him. I popped big for that.
Yes. I popped absolutely big
for that. I thought that was awesome.
Yep.
So, but yeah, if they did a second season, I would 100% watch a second season of this show.
Yep. But you won't go out of your way to buy it.
No, I wouldn't go out of my way. I would not go out of my way.
No. Yeah, I definitely. Let's see. Looking at my list here. So, The Rookie, you want to talk about that one? Because that was the one that you watched last week with Brandon Routh's character being introduced?
Yes, I'd already watched episode 2 before we watched it.
You wanted to watch it, but we didn't talk about it until...
Yes. Yeah, go right ahead.
So, basically, as is tradition with The Rookie, you've got multiple stories going on. You know, each one of them kind of follows their own thing. Brandon Routh is the new TO for West, because his old TO has become a detective. She moves in there and she doesn't want people to know that she's pregnant because she's afraid that they'll, you know, immediately dismiss her, treat her with kid gloves, blah, blah, blah. And so
at first he seems pretty cool, right?
Yeah, Brandon Routh's character? Oh, yeah, he does. But you get the sense, though, like, he seems like he's a really laid-back guy, but he seems like a really laid-back guy in, like, that almost like the creepy uncle kind of way. Mm-hmm. You know, where it's like, what is he hiding or what is he... When's the other shoe going to drop?
Yep.
And it eventually does, and basically what it is that he's been on the force for a long time, and... He did a lot of work in gangs and vice. And so he's racist is what it boils down to. He's very racist. You know, they go to this one house, a black family that their home was burglarized while they were gone. And he's basically blaming the kid, saying that, you know, he's got a dot on his hand. And so that means that it's a gang sign and you swore to the Crips and, yeah, it makes West
very... a very believable reason of you have the dot on your hand, and if you do this with your fingers and put it on your chest, where you have two dots on your chest, now you've got these triangle dots, and it means blah, 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 blah. And he gives him this book of, like, old gang signs.
Yes.
Or, you know what I mean? And when
and it's West, an old book.
Yeah. And West, when West brings it up to Dad, no, sorry, not Dad, not his dad. You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah. Yep.
I can't think of his name. Chen's here.
Yeah. Bradford.
When she brings up the Bradford, who's basically everyone's dad now. Yeah. The Bradford character went from the first episode being kind of like shitty. I guess you can call it, or just like that hard ass guy to like now like very likable, relatable character who's gruff and rough and straight probably to the point, but is respectable of people and others and actually does care, even though he doesn't want you to know he cares. You know, like when Chen's car gets stolen in this episode.
Yes.
That whole story, I absolutely love it. And at first, like, who cares? It's a stolen car. Did you leave your keys in it? Was it unlocked? Well, the door doesn't lock. Okay, whatever. It's your fault. You know, like typical police stuff.
Yep.
But I think my favorite when he's just like, what is the big deal of this vehicle? And she's like, it's the only place I feel safe. And she talks about being kidnapped and how she felt safe in that vehicle. And it's, she's had it so long and it makes her feel safe and this and that and everything. And finally, he's just like, okay, let's go find it. You know, so anyways, he tells Bradford about, you know, his new TO, West does. He's like, Bradford's like, yeah, like, that's an old gang sign. I don't think they even use it anymore, but he's not wrong. It was something. And then he says, but he started with the LA County Sheriff's Office, which you spend the first 2 years as a corrections guard, basically, in the prison, getting shit and piss thrown at you and dealing with gangs all the time and just waiting for someone to stab you. So, yeah. You got a month, take what he has to tell you, but don't take it to heart type of thing.
Yeah, he basically says, you know, take the good lessons that you're going to learn from this guy and let the rest of it just go. Like, basically telling him, don't pick a fight. Don't, this isn't your fight to pick. Just deal with it while you can. In the meantime, Nolan and his TO have been given community policing. So we get another episode that is dealing with the inherent racism in the system. And of course it goes well by the end, but it starts off not going well. You know, there's the one guy there, the one black guy who is basically the spokesman of the neighborhood, as you might say it. He essentially gives them crap the whole time. And for legitimate reason, he's not just like, oh, fuck the police. He's like, yeah, you don't help. You know, you don't send extra patrols down here. You come down when there's one problem, you round up a bunch of people that look like me, and then the drug dealers go right back to doing what they're doing. You know, Nolan decides at one point there's a bike lock on a local park. So he's like, oh, I'll cut the bike lock off there so that kids can go play in the park. And the guy's like, dude, we locked that up because that's where the drug dealers go. If there's an open park at night, they go in there. You don't understand this. And
yeah. Luckily, my son found the used needles in the sandbox before the kids got in there.
Yep. And essentially, he's giving him crap the whole time. But the TO kind of talks to the guy and she's like, look, his heart's in the right place. You know, just maybe work with him. And then, of course, there's the one guy that Nolan does connect with because they're both contractors, and that guy gets roped into doing work in a super meth lab, not a meth lab, but a super meth lab that then they have to take the SWAT team there. And, you know, they're going to die even with their gas mask.
Yes.
That was a little far-fetched, I guess.
No. Okay. Well, I'll start with this.
Okay.
Well, it wasn't. Those super meth lab things, as you were referring to it as, that shit's 100% real. And when those chemicals go wrong, they will kill you. I have seen plenty of police reports of officers doing raids on those, getting into the area where the people there, the meth heads, the people making the meth, throw the chemicals out or mix them and toss them, and those officers die. Maybe not straight away like we saw at the end of the episode where they put the door back up and the guy through the glass door is like foaming at the mouth and they die 2 or 3 days later. But yeah, the inhalation of those gases it strips their insides out and causes critical organ failure.
Oh, wow.
And it's bad. Yeah. So that is a legit thing. It was obviously sensationalized a little bit. But yes, like you said, though, it also is very convenient where Nolan's buddy or the friend Nolan makes, who's also a contractor, tend to do the day job there.
Yeah.
But it was interesting.
Yes.
Good episode. And,
Chen eventually finds her car. Some homeless girl broke in and is living out of it now. And she takes pity on her, as Bradford says, you know, oh, you got your first puppy. I'm surprised it took you this long. Basically takes pity on her and tries to hook her up with a shelter because her parents are dead.
She's a minor.
Yep. But the girl leaves the shelter, so Chen tracks her down again because she finds out from the local school that she goes to the library. And, you know, she basically gives the kid a little pep talk and says, you're still trying. You know, you're still trying to go to school and get good grades, so you still think that you can get out of this, so let me help you. And gives her the car. She says, you know, you can have the car until you're done with it. And,
But it's, you know, it's, she's loaning her the car.
Yep. So that was nice. The Lopez there, her first day on the job, you know, her new commanding officer gives her a bunch of shit. You know, rookies always do the lunch run. They always do the coffee run. She gets a call for a break-in at a funeral home. And it was supposed to be just routine by the book. But somebody turned on the furnace and cooked a body or something. So she wants to file a report
cremated,
on it.
Cremated a body.
Yeah. And her boss is like, yeah, you fucked up. This was just supposed to be a simple burglar or breaking and entering. You know, it was probably weird sex stuff. And now you're trying to make a bigger deal out of this. You're stupid. And
the other thing was, like, you'll never discover who this body is. So these are just, this case will be hung around your neck like a medallion forever.
An albatross.
An albatross, yes. But she eventually does.
Yep, because she's good at what she does, and she realizes that the alarm system, somebody typed in the same code twice, and she's like, they weren't trying different codes, they tried the same code twice, and they look up who the code belonged to, and it was this idiot that used to work there, and they bring him in for questioning, and it turns out that a local gang had, a pretty powerful one, was giving him bodies to cremate on the down low while he was working there, and then when he got fired... He was afraid to tell the gang that he couldn't do the bodies anymore, so they brought him one, and he took it in there. He broke in to do it because he didn't want them to kill him.
Yep. That's the long and short of it right there on that.
Good episode.
Yeah.
I look forward to watching more episodes.
Yes. It's still a very enjoyable show. It gets me sometimes. You know, I'm like, ooh, that... you know, get really excited with some of these like raids that they go on. But at the end of the day, it is just good, fun drama.
Yeah. Yep. It absolutely is. Oh, okay. So I started watching Jessica Jones season 3 on Netflix.
Okay.
Because there's talk of her character coming back and Kristen Ritter playing Jessica Jones and She-Hulk. I'm a bit of a completionist when it comes to things. So I was like, well, I guess I need to watch Jessica Jones season 3.
Yep.
So it stayed pleasantly good until about episode 7
of 13. Okay.
Then it started being absurd. And then like, as I'm watching it, I'm like, the vibe I'm getting from this is that, oh, we really need this to be 13 episodes, but we really only have 10 episodes of story to tell. So, you know, let's start telling some bullshit stories for a few episodes, or drag the story in a different area, or this, that, whatever. So episodes 7, 8, and 9, then episode 10. Okay. Episode 11, it started getting better again. So I still have 2 episodes left to watch.
Okay.
I watched way too much shit, dude. Way too much
shit.
I think we got Allison Borderline to talk about.
Yep. We've got Big Mouth. We've got Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. History of Swear Words. Transformers. WandaVision.
Oh, I didn't even watch History of Swear Words. I forgot.
Oh! it was actually a good one. And funnily enough, it was shit, which you just said.
Nice. All right.
I won't go into it. You should watch it. I'm going to watch it again because this one actually had what I was expecting, which were like fun little factoids about it and like actual etymology and history of the word. And it was really good. Like I found myself going, oh, that's cool. That's interesting. So, yeah, definitely check that one out.
And all right. I'll check that out. Okay.
We'll watch 2 episodes for next week then.
What'd you like about Transformers?
Are
you there?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I was trying to think of...
And I'm like, oh, that's not good.
Yeah, no, I paused because I was like trying to think of something that I liked about it. It wasn't a bad episode. It was just... it didn't really blow my skirt up. I felt that the whole story of there's a space station jammed inside of a space bridge. First off, the math is so wrong. They're like 40% of it is in there. I'm like, motherfucker, that's the tip. That is not 40% of that space station. That is like 10-15% max.
Yeah.
But basically it got dragged into that space bridge. So the space bridge can't close. They're not quite sure what's on the other side, but it should be a place where they can go, but they can't close it behind themselves. And so there, it's kind of long and drawn out with them trying to get in there and figure out what's beyond the space bridge. And while Prime and Bumblebee go in there, everybody else gets attacked by Scorponok, and he wrecks some ass. Like, he's much bigger than any of them, and their lasers seem to be bouncing right off him. And it's a very one-sided fight. And he seems to be quite crazy, too. Like, all the stuff that he keeps yelling about are just, like, kind of insane things. Usurpers, you know, locking away. It seems like he's gone mad being out here for so long or something.
Yes.
And, you know, they manage to escape from him, but they lose one Transformer in the process. And then the final scene that we see is them, you know, like, oh, we don't know how we're going to get back to the Ark or through that portal with him there, you know, because he's banging on the door. And then we see that the Nemesis ship shows up and Megatron's going to go and destroy them all. So cliffhanger. And then what was going on with Cybertron and the other ones?
Yeah, you'll have to remind me. I watched it at the beginning of last week.
Oh, okay.
Very cramping.
It was basically that they're trying to help the remaining Decepticons that didn't get their dry and survive because, you know, the Seekers are still looking for all the Autobots. And they make their way back to the library where they've taken refuge. And they keep having to hide. Like, the Seekers go overhead, so they have to hide. And then one time, one of the Seekers lands nearby, and one of the refugee Decepticons shoots him. And the rest of them are all like, oh, get away. We've got to tell them where they are. And Jetfire shoots one down just in time, and they hope that they haven't transmitted where they are. It wasn't a bad episode. It just, there wasn't an awful lot that really, yeah.
Sticking with Netflix, Big Mouth. So this season started out as one of my favorite seasons and then quickly ended as one of my least favorite seasons.
Yeah. Well, okay, go on.
No, that's pretty much it. I mean, I enjoyed them at summer camp for as absurd as it was. And I think I would have enjoyed a whole season of them at summer camp. Then we get back to, you know, the real world or the school world or whatever it is. They're in school again. We have Cafeteria Girls, which was decent. The very special 9/11 episode, not really a big fan of. Nick Starr, the one of him in the future, not a big fan of that one.
Yep.
I did like 4 stories about hand stuff. Thought that was good.
Yep.
The funeral, And then
the only redeeming thing from the funeral was Jesse's family basically not getting back together, but like her dad is going to keep her so that she can be with her friends at her school and kind of punting Depression Cat and Tito to the side.
Yes. Yep.
That was the redeeming part.
I would agree with that. Horrority House, where they all go to this haunted sorority house and then they basically put them on drugs.
Yep.
And then basically trip out the whole episode and this and that and everything. It was just okay.
I enjoyed it with each one of them basically dealing with their own inner demons in their own way. That was kind of cool, but yeah, go on.
Well, no. And then the final episode, what are we going to do? which is basically Nick has been taken over by Nick Starr.
Yep.
And he's just basically being a toolbox, and they find out that their friend Nick is a lost soul, and the Duke is back at least. And essentially he has to fly up his own butt and defeat the Nick Starr in his brain and become himself. It was just, yeah. Yeah, I didn't care for it.
Okay. See, I enjoyed it. I liked both of these episodes because I felt like they kind of came back to what I liked about Big Mouth, which is kids trying to figure themselves out. The lost soul thing was a bit weird, especially, you know, they had to put the perverted part of, oh, you've got to fly up somebody's butthole, you know, like, and yeah. He does that to Andrew's dad to possess him. And I, again, like a lot of this season, I feel like they went a little over the top and it was just, it was unnecessarily graphic for its own sake. But it was, I liked the metaphor of him basically, you know, going inside of the Nick Starr inside of his head and seeing the scared version of Nick who is like, you know, I've been abandoned. Nobody loves me. So it was nice that way, because again, what this show originally was to me was not just a gross out thing. It was about people trying to figure out what's going on with them in this very fucked up time in their lives.
Which, and I enjoyed those parts of it tremendously, but they just went way over the top with this one.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Nick Starr thing, in my opinion. Yeah.
It was way over the top. I did find it interesting that basically with the Horrority House and then this episode, like, everybody kind of got back on their feet. They kind of came to grips with who they were, especially in Horrority House. You know, you had, what's his name? I want to say Aiden, basically telling his dad that he's gay. And he's like, yeah, I know that you've been gay. I've known that all along. I'm okay with it. You know, your mom's just really old fashioned. So he got some resolution. You know, Missy got to see that she isn't one thing. She is an amalgamation of all these different versions of herself.
I did like that, actually. That was my favorite part of that episode.
Yeah. So there was some growth from all of them. The only ones that really got fucked over were, Jay and
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. Name. Yeah. Lola.
Yeah.
Who basically, like, they've spent this whole season growing closer and closer. And then Jay tells Lola, I love you. And she's like, that's great. Thanks. And her logic is that every time she's loved somebody, whether it's a family member or a lover or whatever, that they leave her. And so she's very scared to love someone. And I've had experience with people like that, and it is a legitimate thing. So, but then Jay cheats on her with his couch cushion. Well,
okay. Did he cheat on her? Yes. He fucks his pillows.
But is that really cheating?
No, it's not. It's masturbation. Yeah.
So those two actually end up like broken up and kind of swearing out vengeance against each other.
Yeah. Yes, they did.
So I believe there is another season coming. I'll be interested. Like I said, halfway through this season, they, you know, Maury made that comment about being over the top and too much and ridiculous. And I'm hoping that that was like a note that they made to themselves as they were writing it. And they were like, okay, maybe next season we get back on track a little bit. I'm hoping.
I guess we'll find out.
Yeah. It doesn't all just have to be ridiculous and gross and every dick and fart joke in the world.
I think another Netflix show came back and I missed out on seeing it was back.
Disenchantment.
Yeah, that came back for another season. That new season was launched, wasn't it?
Yep, I've watched like the first four episodes.
What do you think of it?
I like it. It's definitely not. It's the same show. You know, it's still Disenchantment. It's still funny. It wants to be The Simpsons or Futurama, but it's neither.
Yep.
The jokes are pretty good, but some of them fall a little flat. The intrigue is still going. They have a nice little recap at the beginning to remind you what happened last season. Yeah. I'm still enjoying it. It's definitely not the type of thing that I feel like I need to delve deeply into each episode, nor do I feel like one a week is necessary.
Yeah, I agree with that. I may, I'll probably check it out at some point, maybe.
Yeah, just binge it. It's not bad to binge.
Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist.
Correct.
I watched episode 2.
Mm-hmm.
Zoe's Extraordinary Distraction. I don't know if this show can hold water without the storyline of Zoe's dying dad.
Yes.
I did not appreciate this episode. I thought this episode was okay.
Yep. I got where they were going with it, but yes, without that driving force, like, I felt like introducing the sister-in-law's sister was kind of a throwaway thing. Like, did we really need this new character who basically was just there to, like, provide us with a little bit of insight into the sister-in-law and then fuck her off?
Yep.
The whole Max thing, I don't know, what do you think of that? Like her and Max, but then her and Simon kind of warming up again.
I don't know. I know Zoe definitely seems to want to be with Max and she's committing to him, but it's funny how Max and Simon were buddy-buddy together in the first episode, but now in the second episode, they're not together at all or talking to each other. You know, Max and Mo are dealing with their new business partnership, and basically Mo doesn't want to sign the 50-50 agreement contract because in the past, Mo's always screwed every partner she's had over and been selfish and looked out for himself. Oh, here's the other thing that confuses me. They refer to Mo as him and he,
yes.
But I thought Mo was she and her last season.
I don't remember. I know that there was a big thing about that.
Yeah. So, because I picked up on that.
I picked up on it as well, and I wasn't sure either.
Because I could have sworn last season Mo was a she or her, not a him or he.
Yeah, and they did have a lot to do with that, especially in that episode with the church. Yeah.
And Mo is a name that could be a guy or girl's name, realistically.
Correct. Yep.
But anyhow, eventually Max and Mo work things out, and they sign the agreement together, and they deal with that. And
I liked Mo's reasoning for not wanting to get into it. It wasn't that that Mo didn't trust Max. Mo doesn't trust Mo. Because basically he's like, yeah, the first time that I ever went into business was with my best friend from school, and we had this great idea, and right before we signed the contract, I shut him out and took all the ideas and took the whole thing for myself, and we've never been friends since then because I thought I could do it all on my own, and I didn't need him, and I was an asshole. So I don't trust myself not to do that. Max is like, cool. Well, I'll keep you in check.
Yeah. We meet three other engineers in the elevator real quick. Female engineers. And what's funny about that is Zoe doesn't want to stick around to talk to them because she's going to go have some sex.
Yep.
And she's super excited about going to have some sex. So I thought that was funny.
Yep.
But then later on, she basically realizes through Max saying it is that you have nothing more than she has nothing more than a frat house going on at work where she's the new boss of the floor and every person in her office are guys. So she gets those three female engineers to come in and kicks out and transfers three of the guys out of their office to the fifth floor. So that way the guys will kind of behave themselves now because this lady's there. And I love the one girl who says, I can't remember the name of the game, but they're basically one of the games on the board was like kicking the dick.
Yeah.
Or hit nuts or something like nut shot. And she goes, hey, who's the first round up for Nutshot anyways?
Yeah.
I'm down for that one. I think you right there. So I just thought that was. But we also, yeah, otherwise, go ahead.
We
I'm sorry.
We also had Danny Michael Davis show up to remind us that, you know, he still exists.
Yep.
And because they were having a catastrophe where their smartwatch set a guy on fire, like it didn't set him on fire, but like it overheated and was burning skin.
Yes.
And so Danny Michael Davis like appears on their screen during their meeting and he's like, how are we going to spin this? And fucking dumbass there is like, oh, we could basically say that it's a deep fake video and then make deep fakes of all of our competitors' products and make it look like they're burning them. And then, and he's like, yeah, get out of the room. Oh, sorry, yeah. Zoe, you're in charge. Zoe, would you tell him to get out of the room? But, you know, this is when Simon steps in and basically says, here's how we could do it. Here's how we could spin it. And Danny Michael Davis just promotes him. He's like, oh, yep, you're the new person who's in charge of all advertising and
you're PR. You're our PR guy. You're a new PR guy.
And he's like, I went to school for marketing, but okay, we'll do that.
Yeah. Well, marketing, public relations, kind of similar. Yeah.
Yep. So.
I'd like to correct myself.
Oh, okay.
Batwoman came back this week, but the other CW shows aren't coming back till February.
I thought we had seen that. I thought that we had like checked on that a while ago, and like Flash and everything was February like 19th or something.
Yeah, late February, like February 23rd. But Batwoman came back.
Yeah.
I am watch this first episode. What happened to Kate Kane?
Yeah.
I don't have a whole lot of faith that it's. Well, I don't have a whole lot of faith it's gonna be any good.
No. Nope, I don't either.
But I am gonna watch it. It's just okay. You're taking Batwoman out of the show. Like it'd be like saying, "Well, Adam West, Bruce Wayne's not going to be Batman anymore on our Batman TV series after one season. We're going to replace him with someone."
Yeah.
It's like no. And I get Batman Beyond was not Bruce Wayne. This isn't Batman Beyond. This is Batwoman.
Right.
So yeah. Whatever.
Taking notes here while I'm. Trying to look. Yeah, we've got the three episodes of Alice in Borderland left to talk about, and we've got WandaVision to talk about.
Alice in Borderland. What'd you think?
I think that this show became something different when they reached the beach.
Yep, and I did not like it.
I mentioned that like when we got the first episode where they went to the beach and I was like, boy, this felt like a very different show. And then these episodes continued that.
Yes.
And it feels like they just it's almost like it was written as two different shows. Like somebody wrote the first half of the season as one show.
Yep.
And then the second half became Big Brother meets, you know, whatever this is supposed to be.
Yes. The first half of the episode, we meet the new characters. They come into this world and they have to go play games and we get to see the games. And that's what I liked about the show was seeing them play the games.
Yeah.
And then as soon as they got to the beach, we got a big montage of them playing, of everyone playing a bunch of games. And then the one game that, they had Arise. Yeah. Arisu play.
Yeah.
Where he basically became a member of the committee, if you will, the water rising, electricity and all that shit.
Yep.
Otherwise, we haven't seen any games until episode 10 when we find out that the beach itself is going to be a game zone.
Yeah.
And we learn about game masters and dealers and who's behind everything and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I got to say, I love the show when we were watching these characters play these games and these games made you think. But like you said, once I hit the beach, it became a whole new show, and I started liking it less and less.
I did as well. Fun fact, I realized this week, it clicked to me, so I had to look it up. But yeah, the female character there, Usagi.
Yeah.
Usagi is a Japanese word for rabbit.
Yeah.
And so that made me look up Arisu is a Japanese version of Alice.
Oh, okay. Yep. So
you've got Alice and the
rabbit. White rabbit and Arisu's Alice. And, yep. Yeah.
And then, of course, the leader of the beach was Hatter. Like the Mad Hatter.
Yep. And, the playing cards, of course, which is also another thing.
Yep, and I'm gonna bet that the woman that we saw on the monitors at the very end, who kind of was going absolutely insane and like had crazy eyes to fucking hell, I'm guessing she's going to be the Queen of Hearts.
Yeah, so
I feel like at the end of this episode, they kind of wanted to tell us as the viewers that they realized that we wanted to see more of the games, because she literally says that to the four of them. They're standing there. She's like, "We're coming back and we've got more games to play. And now there'll be face cards too." So it feels more like she's saying basically, yes, we know you want the games. We had to do this detour to the beach. To kind of give you, that's the thing, is we were getting background info on characters that we just met and don't care about. We were getting background info on characters that were dead. Like, we met them in one episode and they were dead. And so we're getting background flashbacks of them. And it's like, why are you doing this?
Yeah. And yeah. So basically the last game on the beach is called Witch, and hundreds of people are get murdered, it seems like, and killed, and they thin everybody out. And we find, like I said, we learn about game masters, we learn about the dealers, we learn about all the different players. And like you said, the end is announcements of the second season is going to be, now we're going to play for these games.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I mean, we could sit here and deep dive into everything that happened in the background and stuff like that. Personally, I don't think we need it. Like,
I don't think we need it either. I would rather see the brief bios and let's watch them play games.
Yep.
That was the best part to me.
Yep.
That's what sucked me in, is watching these thrilling, mind-bending, pulse-pounding games.
And I like the four characters that made it to the end. You know, yep. Erisu and Usagi, obviously. Queen and I can't remember the friggin', I want to call him an albino, but basically yes. The guy with the white hair. Yes. You know, they all have their own things. Like, Erisu is super smart and can figure these things out. The white haired guy is super calm, cool, collected, and he's kind of like Erisu as well. You know, he basically just knows what's going on. Queen, actually, it turns out that she is a very badass ninja who's also transgender.
And I did enjoy Queen's backstory once they got to it.
As brief as it was, and how you had to kind of like piece it together yourself, it was good.
And then it's better than her just all of a sudden becoming a badass ninja for reasons we don't understand.
Right.
That we know, okay, this is why she's skilled and she can fight and talented. And also, this is why we haven't seen her use any of those skills.
Yep.
Because she hasn't wanted to do what her father taught her, basically. Yeah. So
I loved the fight between her and that psycho with the sword. That was so, like,
yeah, no, that was fantastic.
The way he was swinging that sword, like, normally when you see sword fights like that, you see them, they're very choreographed, and you're like, okay, he was swinging that with so much force, and they had the sound effects in there of it, like, whooshing through the air. I was scared for her a couple of times. I'm like, holy shit. And then when he starts throwing the bottles at her and she's just like dodging out of the way, and it's like, why is he bothering? Cause now it's got glass all over the floor and she doesn't have shoes on. It's the Die Hard thing.
Yeah. Definitely Die Hard on it.
Yeah.
I'll definitely watch second season when it comes out. I'll definitely check it out and give it. Pardon me?
Definitely start it at least.
Yes. That's what I mean. I'll give it a go. I'll at least start watching it.
Yep.
What happened, so
yep.
WandaVision, do we want to talk about that now, or do we want to talk about the movies we watched and are any news we have to talk about, and then come back to WandaVision? Because
we could come back to WandaVision because it's kind of a big thing right now, and
yeah, it is.
Yeah,
people may not have watched the first two episodes yet for some reason.
Yeah,
I watched three movies.
Okay,
I did watch Spree on Hulu.
What did you think about that?
That was very interesting. A very unique first-person point of view.
Not quite what you thought it was going to be, was it?
Found footage, but, camera, the way that I can only think of saying found footage. I can't think of the term they use when it's filmed like that, but first-person, maybe. It wasn't quite what I expected.
It wasn't what I expected either.
I did. There was a bit of social commentary on social media and people being like, hey, follow for follow. Give me a like or this, that or whatever. Hashtag this or like all those videos. Hey, guys, how's this going? Today I'm going to do this because people want to be the new terminology of being a YouTuber or an influencer.
Yep.
Or YouTube influencer and all this other stuff, you know. And essentially you had a character who for 10 years has been posting stuff online trying to be an influencer and literally nobody's watching anything he does.
Yep.
And so now he's going to go viral finally for all the wrong reasons. It's interesting.
Yep.
You know, it's definitely interesting, but
like some of the kills were very unique.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
I'm thinking of the drunk people up through the moonroof and
yes.
The dog, like you think they're just going to get clipped, but no,
I kept thinking dogs. They were going to get clipped. Yes. Yep.
Fucking dogs.
Yeah. Or like when the Chinese girl, she's dead and then she wakes up in the car and she does what she does. And, but yeah, no, it's funny because the actor that plays the star in this, they go to the taco truck and he's like, oh, give me those queso fries or whatever it is. And he talks up these queso fries. And then the next thing I know, I see him in a Taco Bell French
commercial.
Fry. Yeah. I was like, that's funny. Yep. But yeah, no, it was okay. It wasn't exactly what I expected. It was decent enough.
Yeah. It wasn't bad. But it definitely wasn't as exciting and as like, thrilling as I expected it to be. And also you're right. It was very heavy handed with the social commentary. Like this was all about influencers and living your life online and trying to get people to like you through your streams. And yeah.
Yeah. I watched The Dead Don't Die.
Okay. Fuck that sounds that. Familiar.
Okay. Bill Murray, Adam Driver, Chloe Sevigny, zombies.
Yeah.
It's on HBO Max. I was excited to finally watch it. No.
No?
No. No. No.
Oh, even with those stars?
No.
Oh.
No. No. There's like this one scene in the movie, right? Where right at the beginning, you have Tom Waits is singing the theme to the movie, which is a song called The Dead Don't Die. And then you have Bill Murray and Adam Driver in the cruiser driving down the road together. And they turn the radio on and he's like, oh, it's not Tom Waits. There's a different character in the movie, but oh, this is a great song. I love it. And he's singing The Dead Don't Die, which is the song we just heard over the opening credits. And Bill Murray's like, man, I recognize the song. Gosh, I really recognize the song. It's good. And Adam Driver's like, yeah, it is. It's a great song. Why do I recognize this? And Adam Driver just goes, well, it's the theme. And like Adam Driver, every delivery he does is deadpanned in it.
Okay.
And there's a few good moments in the movie, but there's not enough. The moments aren't enough to make me want to sit through and watch it again. You know, like I might try to find the best YouTube clip moments and give them to you. You know, there's a scene where he says like it's gonna get worse before it gets better, and then he mentions it again later on near the end of the movie, right?
Okay.
Bill Murray turns to him and says, yeah, you seem pretty positive about that when you say that. Well, yeah, I am. Well, why are you so damn positive? You really want me to tell you? Yeah, you want to know the truth? Yeah, I read the script. What? Yeah, I read the script. You got the whole script? Yeah, I know how it ends. Fuck, you gotta be all the fucking shit I did for Jim. He only gave me the pages of the scenes you and I are in together. Well, I've read the whole script. And then something happens later, and Bill Murray goes, is that in the script? And no, it's not. Not in the one I read. And then, well, I guess this is the part where the movie ends. Or, you know, this is the part where it's going to end, huh? Yeah, it's told you it's not going to end good. And then it was just, yeah. So, no. Very disappointing.
Oh, that's too bad.
It's the most disappointing I've been in a movie I was excited to watch in a very long time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yep. You say you didn't watch any movies, right?
Correct.
All right. So the last movie I watched, hold on, I gotta adjust. on the couch here. My legs getting a little sore. The last movie I watched was the new Netflix original, so I'm not going to talk a whole lot about it, called Outside the Wire with Anthony Mackie.
Yeah, I almost watched that, but I held off. I am going to watch it, but...
Okay. You should watch it.
Okay. I will.
I'm not going to give it a hard sell, mm-hmm. but I'm very interested in what you think.
Okay.
Yep. So... Because anything I really, the one thing I kind of want to say or anything I would really comment about and say the most would really just sort of give it away.
Okay.
And I don't want to give anything away.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. Mm. We had some trailers.
A lot of trailers. I feel like at one point we were just trading them back and forth.
Yeah, we sent each other a bunch of trailers earlier this week.
So you started off with Cherry. Tell me your thoughts on Cherry.
I'm going back.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, it's the Tom Holland flick. This is an Apple Plus movie.
Yeah, that right there, I was like, ah, shit. I'm not going to pay for Apple Plus, but...
Nope, not going to pay for Apple Plus to watch this one movie. What did you think of it, I guess? The trailer. Let me rephrase that. Tom Holland plays this right up here. It's a Russo Brothers movie, which you know makes you want to watch it. But he's an army medic with PTSD that becomes addicted to opioids and starts robbing banks to pay for his addiction.
Yep. And they don't mention in that description that he basically finds the love of his life and then goes off to the army, leaves her behind. Yep. But she's waiting for him. It's not like he just abandons her.
Yeah, it's based on a novel that came out in 2018 by Nico Walker. The novel's write up is a young man drops out of college and enlists in the United States Army. He comes home in a poor state, becomes addicted to opioids, and starts robbing banks. So,
I thought that it looked very dramatic. I thought that it looked very intense, but I don't. It's not the type of movie that I am chomping at the bit to watch.
No, me neither.
So,
you sent me I Care a Lot, which is a Netflix movie.
This looks very interesting. Basically, Rosamund Pike is a woman who. She convinces old people to go to homes, you know, to retirement homes. She takes over power of attorney and then sells all of their property to keep the money for herself. She's like a con artist, but, you know, at a very grand scale. And her most recent person that she's doing this to has very powerful organized crime ties.
Yeah, she just basically picked the wrong person to kind of fuck over.
And so it looks like it's going to be a thriller kind of thing as she's used to doing this. Yep. Now people are coming after her and trying to kill her, but she's not going to go down without a fight because she's a tough ass bitch. And I think it looks interesting. I'm glad that it's on Netflix, so I don't have to worry about paying extra money for it.
Yep. Same here. I sent you the trailer Bliss, which is a Owen Wilson and Salma Hayek movie, which, hey, Owen Wilson's making a movie again. Yay. Yep. I like him. It's going to be an Amazon Prime film, right? Yep. Yes. Amazon Studios film. And it's right up here is an unfulfilled man and a mysterious woman believe they're living in a simulated reality. But when their newfound bliss world begins to bleed into the ugly world, they must decide what's real and where they truly belong. So it's almost like these people are living their lives in what you thought Alice in Borderland was.
Yep.
Like the Matrix world.
Alice in Borderland, Matrix, Total Recall. It had some Total Recall vibes to me because it's like, which one is the real, which one is fake.
Yep. You sent me the trailer to Flora and Ulysses.
I almost didn't because this one popped up and I was watching it and I'm like, oh, come on. But A, doesn't the girl in there remind you of your daughter?
Oh, yes.
Like, she has a very similar look to her as your daughter when she was younger, and even now, honestly. But yeah. It's a Disney Plus, and it looked cute enough that I was like, all right, I'm going to share it. Maybe his kids will like it.
Yeah, that probably is something I'm going to watch with Addison.
Basically, it's this little girl who believes in superheroes, and it's a Disney Plus, but it's set in the Marvel universe because, you know, it's talking about superheroes and it's showing Iron Man and Captain Marvel and all these superheroes. And she finds this squirrel who seems to be a reincarnated superhero named Ulysses. He can't talk. He can't speak English, but he can communicate, and he seems to be able to fly at one point, and he does like the 3-point superhero landing, and it looks cute. Danny Pudi's in there.
Yep.
Which is cool. Ben Schwartz is in there. So yeah, I might check it out.
I sent you the trailer to Breaking News in Yuba County with Allison Janney, Mila Kunis, Awkwafina, Wanda Sykes, Matthew Modine, Alan Barkin, Juliette Lewis, and others. Couple different synopses here to read. One says, a woman buries the body of her husband after he dies of a heart attack when caught cheating on her and struggles to keep it a secret. And the other one is, a woman takes advantage of her growing celebrity status when the police and the public think her dead husband is just missing. It looks good. It looks interesting, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure if it's going to be a dark comedy.
I feel like it is.
Or if it's going to be like a comedy or.
Yep. I feel like it's going to be a dark comedy.
Yeah.
I sent you American Skin.
Yeah. What
did you think of that?
It looks intense.
Very intense.
Little heavy-handed as well, but in a cool way. Like, basically, it's flipping racism around. Like, he got pulled over by white cops, and his brother got shot. So now him and some other people of color have decided to take the fight back against them.
Yep. Yeah, the synopsis here is Lincoln Jefferson, a U.S. Marine who works as a janitor at a prestigious junior high school, attempts to mend his relationship with his son after a divorce. And one night during a routine traffic stop, the boy is shot and killed in front of Jefferson. After the officer is cleared of wrongdoing without having to face a trial, Jefferson is forced to take matters into his own hands.
Oh, I'm so tired of that phrase. There's so many phrases that I think are overused. Forced to take matters into his own hands. Dun, dun, dun.
What's interesting is this movie was first released in September 2019 at the Venice Film Festival.
Oh.
And then it just got released on January 15th. But I don't know if that's to theaters or home video or where it was released, but it is now out there.
That happens an awful lot with the film festivals, I found.
Yeah.
You know, they get screened, and of course COVID obviously had something to do with this too, but they get screened and then it's a while before they're picked up and actually produced and put out into the world.
I sent you the trailer Don't Tell a Soul. What do you think of that?
I think Rainn Wilson has been pushing this like crazy on his Instagram.
Yes,
like,
he most certainly has.
He's like, you should check this out. Go check this out. It's a great movie. Yeah. It looks interesting.
Yeah, really, you need to go watch a trailer to watch it and figure it out. But basically, Rainn Wilson is like a security guard, and he confronts these two boys. One's the older brother who's the douche leader, and the younger brother who's only doing what his brother says and kind of wants to do the right thing. And basically, Rainn Wilson falls in an old well.
Yep.
And he gets stuck down there. And the one brother's like, no, leave him there. He needs to die because we'll get in trouble otherwise. And the younger brother's like, but we should help him. It's the right thing to do.
Yep.
So.
And then apparently he gets out. And now it's like, oh, what's he going to do? Is he going to seek revenge? Or?
Yep.
It looks interesting.
You sent me Firefly Lane.
Yeah, mostly because it had Sarah Chalk in it, and I thought it might be something your wife would be interested in. I will not be watching this.
Yeah, it's like Katherine Heigl and Sarah Chalk are friends from childhood to adulthood, and basically kind of what happens between them along the way.
Yeah.
One becomes a successfully popular, like, celebrity status person. The other one starts a family. One's jealous of the other. One's jealous of the other reasons. Yeah, this is right up my wife's alley of over-the-top drama, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, Steel Magnolias kind of stuff.
Yeah, shit like that.
Yep. And then I also sent you the
Crew. Sorry, hold on. I believe I sent you as Firefly looks like a combination of good and terrible.
Yes. Yep.
And then The Crew, yeah. So that's
a Kevin show James is this is officially endorsed or produced by NASCAR. Yep. So this is not just like, oh, they're a NASCAR pit crew. Like, they actually have the blessing of NASCAR for whatever fucking reason.
Yeah.
This is not only a sitcom about a pit crew of NASCAR people with Kevin James behind the desk, but it's got a laugh track. Or a studio audience or something.
Like I told you, I think it's a laugh track because I don't think they're doing the studio audience shows in COVID times. But dude, the points when they do a joke and the laugh track laughs and I don't, and then they do another thing that I laugh and there's no laugh track, I'm like, well, shit, I'm not gonna enjoy this.
Yeah, this is
shit. I think it's funny. Yeah, the shit I think is funny is not where they're looking for a laugh, and the parts where they're looking for the laugh I think is dumb.
Yep.
So, just real quick, I watched the next episode of Call Me Cat as well.
Oh, and, speaking of laugh track?
Well, yeah, exactly. And again, Call Me Cat, it's like, okay, the ending where they all wave at the camera, like, you know, I could actually, all right, I could see that growing on me. To me, that's a real, like, British sitcom type of thing or Britcom type of thing to have happen. But that could grow on me. However, show itself is still, like, I may or may not watch the next episode. I don't know. It depends on if I find myself having the time or not.
I'm still not going to watch it. Unless you really come to me and say, you know what, you deserve, you need to give it another chance.
Yeah,
maybe I will. But for right now, no. And then the last trailer that I sent you is the most blatant ripoff of Five Nights at Freddy's that I have seen yet. And that is Willy's Wonderland.
Yeah.
Nick Cage starring as a guy who barely speaks. He don't say much. Somebody hires him to spend a night at an old Five Nights at Freddy's. It's basically, you know, Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas, or it's animatronics that are in like a Chuck E. Cheese kind of place. And they all come to life and try to kill people. And there's some teenagers involved, and just go play Five Nights at Freddy's. Any one of them. You'll have more fun than this movie is going to be. It's Nick Cage. So yay.
I mean, I'll check it out.
I don't know that I will.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, the trailer was just wacky enough that I'll check it out.
After that Banana Splits ones that we watched,
I don't know. I enjoyed the hell out of that, though. It was stupid, but I enjoyed it for all those reasons.
Fair point, yep.
But again, it's not like I'd run out and rewatch that Banana Splits ones either. So I was like, all right, I saw it once. I enjoyed it. That was cool.
Yep. I think that was it for trailers. New stuff?
Kevin Smith posted that he finished the script to Clerks 3.
He posted the first page.
Yeah, he posted and he's excited about it. It's a story he's excited to tell about characters he wants to talk about. It's like 103 pages or 101 pages or whatever it is. And as they say, it's like a page a minute. So, you know, it's going to be an hour and a half, little, you know, 101 minute movie essentially, or who knows. You know, here's the thing. I loved Kevin Smith with the first Clerks, with Mallrats, Chasing Amy, Dogma, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, even Clerks 2, you know, loved it. I loved Evening with Kevin Smith 1, 2, and 3. After that, not so much. Then he did Tusk. He did Red State. And then Tusk, and it was like, he did Zack and Mary Make a Porno. Oh, okay, I like that. That's good. Jersey Girl, I didn't think was all that bad either. Cop Out, who gives a fuck? Tusk, Grown. Red State, Yoga Hosers, what the fuck am I watching? You know?
Jay and Silent Bob, reboot.
Jay and Silent Bob reboot. There was one very awesome, amazing, redeemable moment when Holt is talking to Jay about having a kid and everything. I fucking loved it.
Yep.
That part of the movie. The rest of the movie, not so much. And apparently, he stated that he's excited that he's glad that they never made the script that he wrote 6 years ago for Clerks 3 initially. They were doing casting calls too. They were looking for a woman to play Randall's love interest, you know? But the start that they used the beginning of the movie he wrote for Clerks 3 in Jay and Silent Bob reboot, by the way.
Okay.
He might be mentioned in there as well. Will I watch it? Yes.
Yep.
Yes, I will. I love Clerks and I love the characters. Am I super excited about it? No.
No.
Because he hasn't given me a reason to be excited about anything he's done.
Not only that, but this is like the fifth time, no exaggeration, the fifth time that he has said, Clerks 3 is on its way. I've completed a script. Or we start shooting soon. Or what have you.
Yeah. Well, I thought we were going to get a Mallrats 2 by now as well.
Yeah, because that was already started filming and had all the people signed on except for Ben Affleck and, you know, yeah.
But we somehow got, you know, Jay and Silent Bob reboot in there.
Yeah.
Oh, and he does have a movie that's supposed to be coming out this year. Kilroy was here.
Yeah, I've been hearing about that one for a while.
Yeah. But here's the thing, you know, like he did, you know, Clerks 94, Mallrats 95, Chasing 7, Dogma 99, Jay and Silent Bob 2001. And then Jersey Girl 2004, and then Clerks 2, 2006, Zack and Mary 2008. And then it started slowing down, you know. After Zack and Mary, 2 years later, he did Cop Out. He got a lot of bad press on Cop Out. And then he privately funded Red State, which came out in 2011. And then he didn't do anything until like Tusk, 2014, Yoga Hoggers, 2016. And then Jay and Silent Bob reboot 3 years later. And in that, between that Yoga Hosers and Jay and Silent Bob, we were supposed to get Moose Jaws, which is allegedly was all filmed, which was the third part of that Great North Horror trilogy he wanted to do. Like you said, we're supposed to get Clerks a bunch of times. We're supposed to get Mallrats 2. And then somehow we got Jay and Silent Bob reboot out of that. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
But you did share some really happy good news.
Chris Evans?
Yeah.
Returning as Captain America. And then him tweeting after later on, he tweeted like, oh, really? Maybe. I don't know.
But is news he, to me is he what he posted. Teased?
Yeah, news to me. Yep. So who knows? I don't. I'm gonna grain of salt that until we see it.
I think he's being funny because he is a jokester.
Yes, I think he's being funny as well. But if it's true, then yeah, we're gonna see Cap back. And what's funny is they said, oh, not in his own movie, but mostly playing supporting roles, like Tony Stark, like, you know, Robert Downey Jr. playing Iron Man and Captain America: Civil War. He was in that movie a lot. So if that's a supporting role, then yay. But basically saying we're not going to get a standalone Captain America film again. It's just going to be him and other stuff. But whatever, I'll take it.
I will take anything with him as Captain America. I do have some news.
What you got?
Some of it I had already talked about. Take this with a grain of salt, but apparently Seth MacFarlane has been talking about rebooting the Naked Gun movies, and he would like the part of Leslie Nielsen to be played by Liam Neeson. And Liam Neeson has said, yeah, well, that'll either like really cap off my career well or just end it in shit.
This is true.
So this was interesting. March 5th, there's a movie coming out on Hulu called Boss Level. It's going to have Frank Grillo, Mel Gibson, and Naomi Watts. And it says Grillo plays a former special forces agent who finds himself trapped in a loop that constantly repeats the day of his murder. He begins to uncover a secret government plot controlled by Gibson's evil colonel, who sends assassins after him to make sure he doesn't break out of the loop. Love that. It sounds great.
It does sound great.
It says it's directed and co-written by Joe Carnahan, who previously helmed the A-Team, The Gray, and Smokin' Aces.
Okay.
Oh, and it also will have Michelle Yeoh in it.
Oh, nice. I like Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah. So I'm excited about that one. And I wanted to bring this up in news. We were talking earlier about Staged Season 2. So I brought it up, and Staged Season 2 has 8 episodes instead of 6.
Yep.
And the original air dates are as follows. Episode 1 was January 4th, then January 5th, the 11th, the 12th, the 18th, the 19th, and then episodes 7 and 8 will be the 25th and 26th. Now, those are on BBC.
Yeah.
No word yet about when they're coming to Hulu, but they list here. So in season 1, we had the guest stars that were playing themselves, which was Adrian Lester, Judi Dench, and Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah.
Season 2, first off, we have 2 guest stars who are playing other characters. Whoopi Goldberg will be playing Mary, who is Michael and David's agent, and Ben Schwartz will be playing Tom, who is Mary's assistant. Series 2 guest stars as themselves. So we had 3 of them in season 1. In season 2, we've got Ramesh Ranganathan. He's apparently a stand-up comedian. Okay. Michael Palin from Monty Python, Nick Frost, Simon nice. Pegg, Christoph nice. Waltz, Ewan McGregor, Hugh Bonneville, Ken Jeong, Jim Parsons, Josh Gad, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, and Kate Blanchett.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah. So in other words, it went over so well the first season that they were like, let's get more shit going on here.
Yeah, clearly. Damn. All right. No, I can get behind that. That's for sure.
Yep. And that is all that I have for news. Not a big news week.
Okay. Well, let's jump into WandaVision. So if you don't want to watch it or listen to us talk about it, then, you know, don't listen.
Yeah.
But if you do want to listen to us talk about it, then keep listening. What did you think of WandaVision?
I quite enjoyed it. It was very bizarre, but it was bizarre in a very good way.
Yeah, it was bizarre. The episodes were listed as being about a half an hour apiece, but they had like 8 minutes of credits.
Yeah, with no PSs.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was interesting.
They really leaned hard into the you know, capturing the feel of a 1950s black and white show.
Yes. The first 2 episodes were in black and white. They were in the 50s. Kind of an ode to I Love Lucy in episode 1, and then Bewitched in the second one. I guess some influences from other places as well, or other areas as well. And then by the end of the second episode, things kind of changed to like the 1970s.
Yep.
Yeah. So a lot of, I don't know, I guess overall, what did you think?
Overall, I really liked it. They don't tell us what's going on. We get little tiny hints here and there. The commercials are important to watch, especially the second one for the timepiece. You know, the Strucker.
Yep.
That, you know, when they show it, it has an inlay that says Hydra.
Yep.
And it has the Hydra symbol. But we get very little tiny things, like at the very end of the first episode, that person watching the cameras, or, you know, the radio that talks about or has somebody who's like, you know, Wanda, what are you doing? Wanda,
yep.
Where are you?
Who has you, Wanda?
Yes.
Yes.
What did you think overall?
Overall, I enjoyed it. I'm wondering though if this is more of like they took an idea for a movie and then broke it down into episodes and then are trying to and then added stuff to stretch the episodes out so they have 6 episodes, 8 episodes, something like that.
It's, oh God, not
because the credits are so damn long on it, you know?
Right.
And I realize that's also international credits, but still, the credits are so damn long on them.
They were ridiculously long. Like, yeah. I don't think that they had any purpose being that long. There's nine episodes.
Nine episodes, yeah. So it's almost like, all right.
And we're going to get one a week from here on out.
Yeah, so it's like, all right, so nine episodes. It's almost like they took a two-hour movie, added stuff to make it a three-hour movie, and then broke it down into nine episodes. That's my commentary on it from episodes one and two, watching them. That's what I feel like they did. And that annoys me a little bit because it's not like we have a distinct episode of programming to watch. Because essentially, after watching the first two episodes, we don't know what's going on. We know that they're married. They know that they're married. But they don't know what they did before they got married, but they know that they love each other.
Yeah.
And they don't know why they're in this town or why they have, or like, and Vision doesn't know why he has his job and what he's supposed to do at his job or what his job actually does, but he shows up and does his job.
But then when he starts questioning it, they all kind of blow it off, the people at the job, and they give very generic answers. You know, oh, we've got to do these reports for the data. Well, what kind of data? Well, for our sales. Well, what do we sell? Oh, you. Like, they don't ever answer any of his questions.
Then Vision and his wife, there's a heart marked on the calendar, and they don't know why. That one thinks it's their anniversary, one thinks it must be this. And then Vision's boss is coming over for dinner, and their last name is like Englehart, so geez, that must be what it is. Or, you know, their last name's Hart, so that must be what it is. And it's just, at the end of the first and second episode, you know, like you said, the camera pans back and it shows you like someone's watching them on TV.
Yep. Well.
So the first episode's like in the 50s based on dress and attire and everything. The second episode appears to look like it takes place in the 60s. We get more of strange noises. We get a helicopter that crashes into the bushes that is the actual color red when everything else is black and white.
It's a toy helicopter.
Sorry, it's a toy helicopter.
Yep.
And it has the sword logo on it.
Yes.
And we meet some new characters and neighbors, and they have to go to this – Wanda and Agnes go to this planning committee of this talent show for the children, and – Vision is going to be a magician and they're going to do magic tricks. And Vision goes to like the neighborhood watch meeting and he actually wants to take part. And at first they don't want him there because it's like a members only thing. And then he chews a piece of gum and swallows it by accident and it gums him up inside. So he makes him act like he's drunk.
Which was kind of funny the way that they kept doing like the cartoony version of his insides.
Yes, that was. So then they go and they do the whole magic act and Vision keeps doing things that would reveal who he is. And then Wanda uses her magic to cover it up to try to, quote unquote, explain it. And even when her explanations don't make any sense, everyone buys it and goes along.
Yeah, they were kind of funny to see, like, you know, she moves one thing aside and it's like, oh, here's a pulley and a rope. And that's why he's flying. Or the fake piano that was just like a cardboard prop. And the guy's like, that was my grandmother's piano.
And we meet Geraldine. And is it Geraldine? Hold on.
What's that her name? Emma Caulfield's character who, boy, she hasn't been around in a while. Dottie.
Yeah. No, well, I didn't mean Geraldine.
Geraldine, yes. Yeah.
We meet Monica. I thought she said her name was Geraldine in it though. Maybe I'm wrong.
That's who she's credited as is Geraldine.
Okay. Okay. So we meet someone who also doesn't know like Wanda meets another woman who is like, there as well, but she also doesn't know why she's there and she's kind of questioning it as well.
Like meta, outside of it, you know, if you go on her IMDb page, Teyonah Paris, you can see that in Captain Marvel 2, she is playing Monica Rambeau.
Yes.
And, you know, if you look at WandaVision.
She's the daughter of Maria Rambeau.
Yes. And if you look at the IMDb page, you can see that she's listed as Monica Rambeau / Geraldine.
Yeah.
For WandaVision. So, yeah. You know, meta wise, but as far as everybody's concerned, this is Geraldine.
Yes. But Geraldine's also confused as to why she's there and how she got there and everything. And when Wanda like magically zaps her into the magic house box, because he was supposed to put Wanda inside the box, and then Wanda, they close the door, and then she steps behind the partition so that you can't see her when he opens the door again and make her disappear. But he forgot to put Wanda in there, so Wanda magically makes Geraldine appear in there, and Geraldine really doesn't question it.
Nope.
She just accepts, oh, this just happened. So at the end of episode 2, Wanda and Vision are outside, and Wanda stands up and realizes, oh, she's pregnant. Just like that, showing pregnant, going from not pregnant whatsoever to physically pregnant.
It's kind of like in the first episode where they were like, you know, oh, but we are married. We just don't have rings. And they were like, oh, well, let's just make some rings.
Yeah. So they go outside and they see someone come out of a manhole dressed as a beekeeper.
Because they kept hearing a crashing noise.
Yeah.
Like almost like somebody was, you know, taking a truck and slamming it into a wall somewhere.
And when they turn around, and then when the beekeeper guy goes to turn around, Wanda starts to get concerned for some reason.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, everything starts rewinding. Do you think Wanda made it rewind?
Well, yes. Or the I honestly think that she made it rewind.
Okay.
She made it rewind because she was just like, she said no. She was like, nope. And then, like, she kind of focused and rewound it
back to when they stand up and we find out she's pregnant, you know.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. And then again they go outside and everything starts to turn to color. So we were from the 60s, the 70s, 50s, 60s, we're gonna be in the 70s, and we'll see where it goes.
It's funny, the guy in the beekeeper suit, I was like, boy, he looks familiar. And I looked him up and I could see that he's, you know, he's credited for Civil War and Black Panther and Ant-Man and the Wasp and Infinity War. And I'm like, ooh, who was he? Oh, he was a stunt rigging coordinator in all of that. So, like, he literally, you go down through his page and he's been in all this stuff, but it's all as stunt rigger, utility stunt rigger, stunt performer. So, yeah. I don't know if he was just like a stand-in or if this is going to be his first real acting break, but yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I enjoyed the hell out of it.
I did as well, but again, they haven't told us what's going on, and part of me is going nuts from that, but also I know that they are so meticulous. Like, the MCU has been so careful about all this stuff that I know they've got a plan, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing what that plan is, and I don't mind the slow drip.
Yes, slow drip. That's exactly what we're getting. So we're going to get one episode a week for the upcoming 6-7 weeks. And, it's going to be good stuff. Is that everything for you?
I was just looking down through my list. I think that is everything for me.
Well, that is everything for me as well. So
outstanding.
Outstanding indeed.
Another one in the books. Another successful podcast.
I think so.
We seem to be getting good at these, so to speak.
Well, you know, after 247 times, I hope so. After 20 years, I hope so. I must admit, you're better than I am. But I am not left-handed. All right, apparently I want to go watch The Princess Bride.
Wonderful, wonderful movie.
Yeah. Hey, for those of you interested, this Saturday night, the 23rd of January, on Bruce Campbell is going to be doing a live watch-along to Evil Dead. Providing commentary to the movie, answering questions, talking about behind the scenes. It costs $25. Apparently for $50, you can buy the VIP, which I have no fucking clue what that is. but It costs $25, starts at 9 p.m. Eastern time. And I think I'm going to do it.
I still haven't decided if I want to or not.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do it. I haven't purchased it yet, but I don't know what $50. I don't need a private Zoom meeting with Bruce for, I don't know what we talk. Oh my God, you're so awesome.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh my God. You were so great in that movie. I loved it.
I gotta say, dude.
I fanboy too hard.
You said that and it reminded me, I had brought up this other news thing, but I didn't put it in my notes and I forgot to, but you, obviously this isn't going to happen, but I thought you'd find it interesting. This year, August 13th through the 15th and August 15th through the 17th, they're going to be celebrating the 35th anniversary of Friday the 13th, part 6, Jason Lives.
It's my favorite one.
And most people's favorite one. And they're doing it at the actual filming location. So they're going to be doing it. Where is it? The event is exclusively for 18 plus patrons, and we'll see those participating spending two nights in the cabins at Hard Labor Creek State Park. The official description of the event further reads, fans will enjoy an entire weekend of summer camp, shared cabin camping with bunk beds, games, blah, 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 campfires, roasting marshmallows, making s'mores, watching VHS horror movies on tube TVs, swimming and canoeing in Crystal Lake, and of course, a complimentary outdoor screening of Jason Lives by the lake. So this is where it was set, and yeah.
And where is that?
It's in, hold on. I just had it. Rutledge, Georgia.
Oh, Georgia. Okay.
Yeah.
That'd be badass.
It would. I mean, obviously, we're not going to go to it because it's in fucking Rutledge, Georgia. Well, but
yeah, no, we're definitely not going to go, but that would be badass.
But it says that you'll tour the locations, including both the Jason Lives Cemetery and Camp Crystal Lake / Camp Forest Green.
Nice. Well, hopefully they'll re-release it like at drive-ins or something this year.
I agree.
That'd be a neat thing. I would definitely go see that at the drive-in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Here I found it on Bloody Disgusting.
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, hold on. Learn more and grab tickets now. I got to see how much this costs.
Yeah. Let me know. Cause...
Let's see here. Oh. Oh, this is interesting. On this website, it's called, the Myers House, which is in North Carolina. And it's called On Set Cinema. And my buddy, Brandon, who lives down in North Carolina, went toward the Myers House before COVID and everything. And it's an exact replica of the the Mike Myers house from the original Halloween movie. And they screened the movie on a big screen there and everything. But apparently they're going to be doing upcoming screenings. They have listed as Empire Records. Ooh, Thursday, nice. April 8th, 2021 in Wilmington, North Carolina at Restaurant Rebellion, a.k.a. Empire Records, where it was filmed.
Awesome.
Special guest. Let's see here. Oh, Craig Edwards, who played the male Rex Manning fan in the movie, is going to be there. So, yeah.
Oh,
that's filming the Hunger Games in North Carolina. That is a deep cut. A lot of North Carolina stuff going on in here. Children of the Corn being filmed in the town of Gatlin in Whiting, Iowa.
Ooh, where nice. They filmed Children
of the Corn. Let's see here. Here we go. Friday the 13th, special guest director Tom McLaughlin. Tom McLaughlin's going to be there. Doom, doom, doom. Click here to purchase tickets. Admission, $250. It includes a shared cabin lodging for both nights, one special event t-shirt, one Tom McLaughlin autograph of your item, one table photograph with Tom, your camera, all games, filming locations, walking tour of both the Jason Lives Cemetery and the Camp Crystal Lake, Camp Forest Green Fire, Firewood, Marshmallow, S'mores, Canoes, and Outdoor Movie Screen of Jason Lives. Foods not included. And then if you do the Friday
included,
foods not included. You got to bring your own food, yeah.
You got to bring your own food for 2 days in a row.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah, you got to pack enough food.
Doesn't that just seem odd to you? Like, what are you supposed to show up with, like a mini fridge or something? We're just all non-perishable stuff.
But $250 is not as bad. That's actually
I mean, that's not a hotel stay.
Well, that's for two nights.
Yeah, you're going to stay 125 bucks a night.
Yeah, and if you go down with a friend, so if you go, like, if you and I were to go, it would be 500 bucks for two nights in a cabin together, you know? But...
You had me at cabin together.
There you go, buddy. But if you're me, you know, and you're the thrifty fella, then you go on Sunday through Tuesday. It's only 150 bucks. Ooh. However... Tom McLaughlin's not there. So the extra 100 bucks you're spending is to meet Tom McLaughlin, get a picture with him, get an autograph and everything. 150 bucks includes shared cabin lodging for both nights, all games, filming locations, walking tour, both Jason Lives Cemetery and the Camp of Crystal Lake, firewood, marshmallows, s'mores, canoes, and outdoor movie screening of Jason Lives, food not included. So there you go.
Yeah.
Holy shit. They're doing The Shining in Oregon at the Timberline Lodge, a.k.a. the Overlook Hotel.
Ooh, that's badass.
Yeah. In Cape May, New Jersey, they're going to do The Prowler.
Nice.
November of 2021.
I'm assuming that all of these are planned but may be canceled due to COVID.
Yeah, I would say so. I would say so. Yeah.
Cool.
That is cool.
Yeah. Oh, hell. Anyhow, cool. All right, well, that's it for me. I'm on Twitter. I'm Superstar Mal.
I'm the Quantum Geek, G33K.
That's the show.
We'll talk to you later.